WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
Holy mountain, to behold your glory and receive your law, what have I left undone?
That's Charlton Heston as Moses. Heston's booming voice reverberated in other biblical epics like Ben-Hur and The Greatest Story Ever Told. He not only was close to God in his movies, he played the genius Michelangelo in The Agony and the Ecstasy. He was a cop in Orson Welles' Touch of Evil, a lonely cowboy in Will Penny. He was the Pursued in The Planet of the Apes and was subjected to earthquakes and airplane catastrophes in the disaster films of the 70s. I wanted to know what it was like to shoot the scene in the Ten Commandments in which he led the exodus of Jews out of Egypt.
It had 8,000 human beings and 5,000 animals, and it took, to get the shots with all those people, you could only do about 5 takes a day, because you to get them back to where they started from took hours. And it's the kind of film that obviously can never be made again. They won't ever make Lawrence of Arabia or Bridge in the River Kwai or Ben-Hur or any of those films again, because they're far, far too expensive. I saw they ran the Ben-Hur budget, the original budget, which turned up in somebody's file drawer, through a modern computer program that production managers use when they're budgeting films. To make Ben-Hur today would cost $127,800,000.
Wow. So tell me something about what it was like to do the Exodus scene and the crossing the Red Sea scene with...
Well, you need the stick. You have to have the stick to do it. Did you
of
notice
course.
What a nice day it was in New York yesterday? You're welcome. I'm glad to do it. Glad to help. But obviously those scenes are, in a sense, the English actors call NAR, no acting required. If you stand in front of 8,000 people in the Egyptian desert and lift up a stick and say, "Bear us out of Egypt, O Lord, as an eagle bears its young upon its wings," you don't need to act that. The scene does it for you. You are overwhelmed by the reality of what is around you.
Yeah, it must give you a real sense of power.
Indeed it does.
Even
Indeed
though you it know does. It's all stage, you've still got, 8,000 people following
yes,
you.
Yes, yes. It's quite an awesome experience.
You did the voice of God, right? In the scene where Moses is on the mountain and God is
telling
the Ten Commandments.
Well, which I think is perfectly logical, because where do we hear the voice of God? Inside our own heads, right? And whose voice speaks inside your head?
That's an interesting way of looking at it. I'd like to ask you about the chariot race scene in Ben-Hur, which is, Ben-Hur won, 11 Academy Awards, mm-hmm. and the chariot race scene has always been considered one of the really important action sequences.
Category for chariot races, though.
You're right. So you had to...
It is regarded, I suppose, as the best action sequence ever filmed, but it was not... It didn't win an award.
You had to learn how to actually drive a chariot for this?
Yes, I went over some 6 weeks before we started shooting, and Yakima Kanat, who directed the race sequence, personally taught me to drive. And by the time we were ready to begin the picture... I was a minimally competent charioteer, but as I pointed out to Yak one day while we were resting the horses after working a couple of hours with him, I said, "You know, Yak, I can handle this team pretty well now, but there's just the one team out here, and when we start shooting this sucker, there's going to be 8 other teams, and I'm not so sure about I can cut that or not." And he looked at me and he said, "Chuck, you just stay in the chariot. I guarantee you're going to win the damn race." As indeed I did.
So was everybody, were most of the other drivers stunt drivers so they could get out of your way real quick?
Mm-hmm. Steve Boyd, who unhappily had not been cast until he only had about 3 weeks work in the chariot, but he drove some sequences as well.
Mm-hmm. There was all these scenes where...
action sequence... Mm-hmm. If the principal has been trained to do whatever it is he's supposed to do well enough to be photographed doing it, you are surrounded by professionals. I mean, they were not about to run over me if I fell out of the chariot. I don't think they were.
And it didn't really run over Stephen Boyd when he fell out, right?
No, no. No. What was an accident was I drove a great deal of the sequences,
mm-hmm.
but the scene where Ben-Hur is thrown out of the chariot when it jumps the wreck was not planned. He was not supposed to go out of the chariot, but he was accidentally thrown out with Gru, and I didn't do that. Joe Cannot, Yak's son, but Joe was thrown out of the chariot, managed to throw himself clear, and was only scratched. If the chariot had run over him, it would have killed him, because those things weighed half a ton with steel wheels. But then Wyler, who of course directed the picture, saw that footage, and he said, "We got to use that shot." And Jack said, "I thought Ben-Hur was supposed to win this sucker, Willie. How are we going to get him back in the chariot?" And Willie said, "Well, we'll cut before he falls absolutely clear and have Chuck get in the tongue and climb back in," which I did very quickly.
Did that look convincing to you when it was cut together?
Oh, sure. Yeah, it's totally convincing. It was not my favorite shot to do, I'll tell you, but it's totally convincing.
You had to climb back in as the chariot was moving.
Yes, but I was on the tongue of the chariot between the horses and the chariot itself.
Let's take a short break, and then we'll talk some more about your movie career. And my guest is Charlton Heston. This is Fresh Air. Charlton Heston is my guest. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but it seems to me in the epic movies that you made, one of the things you had to do was show a lot of bare chest.
Depends. I'm in certainly The Slave Galley in Ben-Hur. In Commandments in the Brickyards. Nothing in El Cid. I guess I was naked in Planet of the Apes for a couple of scenes. A certain amount of skin, no question. That's not unheard of these days either.
No.
What'd you say?
Absolutely. Have you been made some really ludicrous offers by people who wanted you to be at their event in some kind of quasi-biblical get-up or persona?
I think word has gotten around that's
that you don't do that. Yeah,
do. I wouldn't say that's a major problem.
Right.
It's come up once or twice, maybe, but.
In 1969, you made the movie Planet of the Apes, which turned out to be a huge commercial success, one of the biggest movies of the year at the box office. What was your opinion of the script when you first looked at it and of the final film?
I was impressed by the script. I was a little surprised at the extraordinary success of the film because it took 2 years to get anyone to finance it. See, this was, I suppose, Planet of the Apes was the first of the space operas in which we are still awash. You know, Star Trek and Star Wars and so on, Return of the Jedi, are all space operas. And at the time, the studio said, "You guys are crazy. You want to do a film with spaceships and talking monkeys? This is like Buck Rogers, Saturday morning serials." And that's how they viewed the genre, which had not been touched since the Saturday morning serials of the 30s. And, of course, we had struck a nerve with audiences, as filmmakers are still discovering.
I figure all the actors in the movie really envied you because you didn't have to wear the ape makeup.
Indeed, they did.
On the other hand, you had to take a lot of physical abuse in the film.
I didn't get to wear any clothes in a couple of scenes either.
Well, you also had to take a lot of physical abuse.
It certainly was true. I didn't realize it until we were halfway through the picture, but in almost every scene, I either get hit or chased or whipped or netted or sprayed with fire hoses, and it was a strenuous undertaking. But it's a good film, and I'm very glad I made it, since, in effect, it started a whole genre.
Mm-hmm. Is it exhausting to go through a day where you take that much abuse?
Well, making a film is exhausting.
Yeah, uh-huh.
You know, making a film, acting in a film, especially directing a film, is not fun. It's not supposed to be fun. A movie's supposed to be marvelous to watch, exciting, amusing, frightening, whatever, inspiring, whatever it's supposed to be. But making it it's not supposed to be fun for the people who make it. On the other hand, as Orson Welles said memorably, making a movie is the best set of electric trains any little boy ever had to play with. And both those statements are true, and if you can't understand them, I can't explain it.
In the 70s, you starred in several of the disaster films including Earthquake, which was one of the first. How did you end up being in, what was it, four
films? We were all in disaster films. The reason for that is very clear. Disaster films are, in essence, multiple Jeopardy stories. You take a natural disaster or a man-made disaster or a threatening circumstance and put a cast of disparate characters, a dozen or 15 people who don't know each other, most of them. And the point of the story is how they respond to the circumstances. And it's a perfectly valid genre. But if you're making a movie about it, you have these 12 or 15 people, and you introduce each one in a scene in the beginning. They're usually not in the same scene because they don't know each other. They're not supposed to. That's part of the idea. Then you often don't see them again for half an hour. And if they come up again, you don't want the audience saying, let's see, who was that? Was that that fire chief in the beginning? And the guy said, then they want to say, no, that was Steve McQueen, dummy. This is Paul Newman. He plays the architect. And for that, you need very high profile, very well-known actors. And we all did at least two of them. And finally, they used up all the possible stories and the audience got tired of them. And I think we were all tired of them too by then, but we made an awful lot of money out of them.
In Earthquake, you actually asked for your character to be killed at the end.
Well, I thought, you know, I said, I didn't ask, I had script approval.
Oh, you did?
Oh, sure.
Oh.
And I said, come on, guys, this is ridiculous. I play this nice architect who knows there's going to be an earthquake and they got to build the buildings differently, and he has this terrible wife and this nice mistress. And at the end of the picture, the earthquake proves that he's right about the buildings and it kills his mean wife and he gets to go on into a happy future designing earthquake-proof buildings with this beautiful Canadian girl, Genevieve Bujold. And I said, I said, let's surprise him a little. Let's have him killed too. And so they did.
Did you have to work hard to convince them?
Mm-hmm. I did.
Charlton Heston is my guest. You served a very long term as president of the Screen Actors Guild.
7 years, yeah. Longer than anyone.
I'm wondering if you feel that affected your acting career at all, and if you felt that
No.
I wonder also if you feel that Hollywood is ever divided politically, like the kind of director who might hire your liberal counterpart Ed Asner, or the kind of director who would hire you. Do you know what I mean? In other words, if Hollywood in its casting ever splits along political lines,
I
conservative
certainly
and
hope
liberal.
Not. I'm sure Ed hopes so too. Although Ed is implied sometimes that is the case. I've never felt that.
Mm-hmm.
When I was president of the Guild, and up until that time, not only the officers, but most of the board members were very well-known actors. That is not true now, and I have no idea why that's true, except I suppose there are so many people in the Guild. There are now some 82,000 members of the Guild, which is a horrifying figure. But I've certainly never felt that not only my leadership of the Guild, but my political opinions in general have affected my employability. I still seem to be making a good living.
Did you ever see the movie My Dinner with Andre?
Yes. Yes, I know. I'm referred to favorably in that. And that's the first time that's ever happened to me.
So when did you find out about it in the theater when you were watching the movie, or did you know by the time you saw the movie that your autobiography was mentioned?
I can't remember, frankly. I know two or three critics mentioned that, but I can't remember whether I read those comments before or after I'd seen the film. But I liked the film. I thought it was quite interesting.
And that must have been good for business, too.
Yeah, I don't know. I was not billed.
That's actor Charlton Heston. This is Fresh Air.